And good morning, folks, and welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We are coming to you live this morning, June 28th, 2025. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back right after this song.
Once a man's home was his castle, only his foes would violate. And the border of his property was the moat round his estate. All these kingly rights of sovereignty, once bestowed on us by God, have been lost somewhere in history, in the fine print and the fraud. Once a man and his religion was protected by the law. In America, the Constitution formed a verbal wall. Now the law that used to separate is a law that's daily breached. Now the worried watchman on the wall is crying, heaven's under siege. Heaven's under siege. Woe now, heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ rot in jails for their beliefs. You know corruption reigns in government, but heaven's under siege. Heard the watchman sound a warning call back in 1992. When they murdered Dickie Weaver, just like they'll murder me or you. When they stormed the church in Waco, women and children burned alive. And now the ones who rot in prisons are the ones they let survive. Heaven's under siege. Woe now, heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ rot in jails for their beliefs. You know corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege. Now a voice cries in the wilderness as the Lord prepares his church. Will his called and chosen servants be found faithful on this earth? Will we pass the test of heaven's quest, never counting earthly loss? Will we fight like Christian soldiers with our eyes upon the cross? Heaven's under siege, woe now, heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ rot in jails for their beliefs. You know corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege. I said corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege.
And good morning, and we are back, and you're listening to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers this June 28th, 2025. And good morning, Tim.
The right button pushed. Good morning.
And good morning, Will.
Good morning.
And good morning, Josh. Well, Tim, why don't you start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
Be delighted. Our Lord God and Heavenly Father, we just come before you this morning. Lord, we just ask that you would bless this broadcast wherever it may find its way to, Lord, as it's listened to, that it might lift spirits and light minds, and Lord, that it might lead to the throne of the Almighty God, wherever it's heard, whatever it brings, that it might enhance you bless your people in a special way, Lord, and that you would watch over them and that you would make people aware of their heritage and of who they are and what they are and of the power of their Lord. I just thank you for it now. We ask all these things in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Yeah, well, there's a lot of things to talk about, and we've got quite a bit of things to talk about, and quite a few things that we're gonna discuss this morning. I think we've got Josh on the line now. Josh, are you there? Maybe not yet. Okay. All right. Well. I don't know, do either one of you men, you got anything that you want to start off with this morning?
I just, I read early this morning. I just know it's something we've talked about a lot on coffee, and I almost look at it as a praise report, and that is the federal government has revoked the protected status of the Haitian immigrants. They're no longer considered to be special as far as their status, and they're being told they have to go back to Haiti now. So they're saying it's 500,000 of Haitians that are being given orders to leave the country. I thought that was something.
Wow, that's huge. Hey, Tim, yeah, I think you, Tim, you got to move your mic a little way farther away from your mouth. I think we're getting some feedback there.
Okay. Is that a little better?
I think so. No, yeah. Lost my train of thought. Interesting. Haitians. bringing South Africans in and getting rid of the Haitians. Well, I think that's definitely a good thing.
No doubt. I think that's a win for everybody. Except maybe the Haitians. I think they're still the unfortunate part for the Haitians is they have to go back to Haiti. But I mean, that's.
So what does that mean? If they lose their status, does that mean that do we send them back, or the ones that are here, do they?
No, the way I was reading it, Jason, is they were here. This is coming from Kristi Noem, the Homeland Security Secretary, and the reason they were given what was called TPS or temporary protected status. And this is something that I guess the federal government can issue to any country or any people from whatever country if they're having a civil war or whatever. The federal government has canceled that and said that is no longer valid. And since it's no longer valid, they are no longer here legally. That they're being given notice that they have to start the process of repatriating back to Haiti. DHS is saying that there's been approximately 520,000 Haitians that have been allowed into the United States under this temporary protective status, and that they are to be repatriated. Interestingly enough, the quote was, "The environmental situation in Haiti has improved enough that the federal government now believes it's safe for Haitians to return back." So,
well, I would agree. That'll help our environment a little bit, too.
That was going to say, I don't know about Haiti, but it certainly makes our environment a lot safer. We've talked about this app, the CBP app on these phones that were given out. What the official stance from the Homeland Security is that they're encouraging these Haitians to take advantage of the resources returning to Haiti, which can be arranged through the CBP app. And that they're going to be asked to leave, it looks like, by August 3rd, 2025.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that's pretty doggone quick, I think.
Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. So I see that as a win.
That is definitely a win. That's a win for us, I would say, for sure. I know that when the Haitians came over, they said that it was going to be a temporary deal to begin with, and it hasn't turned out to be very very temporary at all. So
I know that
no, and these Haitians, these are some of the some of the just filthiest people that that I've ever been around. I'm going to go to a song. Hang on, and we'll be right back. We're having a little bit of a technical difficulty here.
Dear Lord, now I've got this problem. Seems it increases every day. Seems the more that I try to follow you, the more the price that I pay. Now I've got friends who will sit and judge me just for being your kind of man. Out of spite, some bite and backstab me just for doing the best I can. Take Brother Bill. Now he is such a gossip. From what I hear, it's widely known. And Brother Bob, why he's so fault-finding, I had to call him on it right over the phone. Pastor Lieberwitz, he's a hypocrite. Lord, won't you make him see his sins? And won't you save me from the likes of those who call themselves Christians? Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers? I can feel them creeping up and closing in on me. Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers and take the log out of our eyes so we might see. Now you've saved me from temptation and all the wiles of worldly wealth, from the trials and the tribulations I usually brought upon myself. And you've rescued me from conspiracies that were planned to harm and hurt. Won't you save me from the elders who conspire down at my church? Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers? Now I can feel them creeping up and closing in on me. Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers and take the beam out of our eyes so we might see. Now the adversary, he is subtle and he wears a slick disguise. And he's always causing trouble, finding specks in people's eyes. It's when he wears the robes of heaven, it's when he acts the most like hell. But the one that he resembles most is the one we call ourselves. Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers? Now I can feel them creeping up and closing in on me. Lord, won't you save me from a few of your followers and take the plank out of our eyes so we might see.
we're back.
Lord, I've got this problem.
And I think if I, I think we've got everything figured out. I know I just got a little bit of background noise, but I'm not sure where it's coming from exactly. But I think we've got Tim on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
And we've got Josh on the line.
Morning.
And we've got Will on the line. Good morning.
Hello.
All right. Well, a lot of things going on. I don't know. Back to we were talking about the Haitians. Getting rid of the Haitians. That's definitely a good thing. I seen a thing down in your neck of the woods there, Will, that said that Texas stands firm with Second Amendment. I don't know if this is actually new news or good news. I think it's good news, but Greg Abbott signed pro-gun laws, including a ban on enforcing out-of-state flag orders, red flag orders, and prohibiting taxpayer-funded buyback programs. I mean, that sounded like a definitely a good thing. And then I heard that they were going to go ahead and do the 100% reciprocity deal with concealed carry. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. I know. First up, just really briefly, in Texas, our state lawmakers, they only meet every 2 years, and the governor can call them back at any time. And I know this is some of that, that he's called them back, and they're cleaning up some laws. There's no red flag gun laws in the state of Texas. And there was some loopholes that I think he's closing in that, saying, well, if you've moved here from another state that has red flag gun laws, do those apply in Texas? And what this law is saying is, no, they don't. We're not going to recognize, you know, any of that nonsense from another state. So I think that's kind of that. And on the reciprocity, I think we had like 30 states or something like that, that if you had a concealed carry or licensed carry in another state, and what Abbott's doing in this is saying, any state, it doesn't matter if they recognize us or not, that if you're here visiting the great state of Texas and you have a license to carry from wherever, New Hampshire, that we'll recognize that and you're covered in the state of Texas.
Okay. All right. Well,
that's... yeah. So, positive stuff. Yeah.
Tim, what were you going to say?
These steps forward all the time. I mean, it's there's a whole as a matter of fact, there's almost like crowding the bus on some of this stuff as far as reciprocity and also repeal of different groups' powers and fees and fines. I think it's pretty interesting to note. It's a little hard to keep up at the moment sometimes, it seems like to me.
To me, the important part of that is it's not so much that this is anything new, because, I mean, I think we would all agree and we all believe you should be able to carry for self-protection no matter what state you're in, as much as it's just the recognition here in Texas that this is the law of the land and we're going to recognize it.
Interesting.
Yeah, really, it's more about what the government and the enforcement angle and everything that is about the citizens. It's like that's it's like, no, you have a right to defend yourself. And it's a right. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. But it's pretty neat they're trying to catch up with everything. And it's that way all over the U.S. right now.
But as far as the short barrel firearms, the outlaw shotguns or what have you, I've always thought that was ridiculous. Law, but thing with the barrel rifles, you can put a brace on it and it's legal and not. And, you know, it's just one more of those ridiculous rules. Hopefully, it's done away with.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, it's like, okay, so you can't have a short barreled shotgun, but you can have a short barreled firearm. And I mean, that was kind of one of those things that came out, you know, when they came out with these shockwaves and aftershocks and different stuff. Mossberg came out with one. Remington came out with one. And it's not classified as a shotgun. It's classified as a firearm. And, I mean, the thing is it's the exact same thing. And it's just, I mean, just the insanity of just having to deal with that. I mean, in my mind, all that stuff should just go away because it's ridiculous. It's you can have a short-barreled shotgun, you know, where you have to have a $200 tax stamp because it's registered as a shotgun. But then you can have the exact same thing that is considered a firearm, and it's not classified as a shotgun, and that's legal. Because of, you know, the shape of the grip or something like that. I mean, a lot of this stuff just needs to go away because it's stupid.
It's almost like it's confusing on purpose, huh?
Oh, gee whiz, it is. And it's like, okay, did I pick up the, short barrel shotgun or did I pick up the, you know, the firearm? And at the same time, I get it. And I did appreciate it when it happened because, I mean, it took the, you know, made it where somebody could, you know, a regular civilian like myself could go out and buy something that was considered a firearm instead of, going through and having to pay a $200 tax fee and do fingerprints and send it in and all that kind of garbage. I mean, they're fun. I'm not gonna lie. It's a very, very effective weapon if somebody was to have one. But it gets so confusing with dealing with the terminology and the paperwork and all this kind of stuff. I mean, it's like after something like this, who would go and buy a short-barreled shotgun if they can buy a firearm, which is without jumping through all the hoops? It just doesn't make any sense. So I think that a lot of that stuff needs to be completely done away with, completely, you know, thrown out. I hope and it looks like we're going to see that, and I hope that we do see that here shortly.
Amen.
And I'm another ridiculous.
Go ahead.
The local government for the buyback, like, that shouldn't even be a thing, you know?
No, it shouldn't. Ever. Absolutely.
I'm okay with having a city-sponsored flea market, maybe, where everybody can get together and trade guns and buy guns. But yeah, the whole government buyback thing, I don't know about all that.
Sounds kind of like a citywide swap meet gun show. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I'd jump behind that for sure. Interesting. Just one more thing on that. I was kind of reading into it this also removes with Child Protective Services in Texas that I didn't know this existed. So that's the reason why I want to bring it up, that part of this, the stuff that Abbott signed in, was if you were to be a foster parent in the state of Texas, you had to provide a list of every firearm in your home to Child Protective Services, and you allow them the ability to come into your home and inspect your firearms anytime they wanted. And this removes that from the books and takes that power away from CPS.
Good.
I thought that was cool.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That's very good.
Extremely cool.
Yeah, I had no clue that was even a thing.
Yeah, I did not either.
That's one of those things that strikes it at a more, even, you know, a more basic right, because it's like, well, you don't have, you know, they have this ability to do that. Now you've eliminated their ability to defend, protect, and maybe keep safe their family or whoever's under their roof, depending on the whim of some government bureaucrat who, you know, and I'm not, who decides they don't like you or don't like something you have or whatever. I mean, it's like, wow. And the problem is, you know, you think as many laws as we've got on the books now that we pretty much have solved all of the ills in society as far as bad people, bad actors, and all that kind of stuff.
but it seems like every, you know, the general run of things as it goes by, those issues or those problems just become worse. The more we have, the more problems we have.
They keep throwing laws at. I'm trying to think of a good way of saying this. It's not a lawful, unlawful problem as much as it's a sin and evil problem. And you can throw all man's laws at it as you want, but it doesn't get to the heart of the matter, and that is the sinful nature of man going unchecked. I mean, that I hope that makes sense, but that's kind of the way I'm viewing it. It's a morality issue. It's not a how many laws you can make issue.
My daughter says, yeah, they just need Jesus, Dad. You know?
Like, there you go. That's an easy way of saying it. For sure. I got one. I don't know if y'all saw, kind of switching from that just for a second, but it looks like kind of going back to the Haitians. I think this is kind of a big deal, but as far as the census is concerned, this administration, the Trump administration, is moving to exclude illegal immigrants from the census, that only U.S. citizens will be counted. And which to me is kind of a, well, duh, like, you know, who would count them anyways? But I guess this has been done, and this is throwing a whole bunch of people into a, I guess, just a hissy fit, because I guess this is how they appropriate House seats and federal funding into these communist controlled cities like Chicago and places like that. And so the administration is pushing through to say that you can know, in order to be counted for the census, you'll have to be able to prove that you're an American citizen. I think that's pretty good. That's got to be a good thing.
Oh yeah, I would think so. Absolutely. I hope we keep track of how many of them that there is that we know about. But other than that, yeah, absolutely.
It occurred to me just something you just said, Jason, is this a backdoor way of identifying more illegals?
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that, you know, that'll probably be, it's like, okay, we know where you are. Which, you know, kind of is interesting. I mean, I don't know a lot of information about this. It did something that came across my desk a couple days ago, but I guess there's all these kind of videos and, on, Instagram and TikTok and, different social media sites that are talking about, radical leftists that are calling for violence against ICE agents. Mm-hmm. I guess that is getting to be kind of a big deal. I mean, and these are from the couple that I seen. They were white people, and they were calling for violence and death of ICE agents. And I thought, you know, okay, and these are people that, I mean, just I talk about how radical some of these people are. It was, rather disturbing. I mean, you know, you know anything about that? Anybody?
I know there was a vice mayor, which is like an assistant mayor in the city is Cudahy, which is, I guess, just in Los Angeles County. And there's all kinds of video out there. I don't think this is exactly what you mean, Jason, but it's going along with it. Her name's Cynthia Gonzalez. And somebody sent it to me, and I watched it. It was on YouTube. And she was at a rally. And like I said, she's an assistant mayor there in Los Angeles. And she was calling for the Cholos. And Cholos is kind of a Spanglish that means gangster. I mean, that's what it is. It's just a street gang member, a Cholo. And she was wanting to know, here's an exact quote. It says, "You guys are always tagging everything up, claiming your hood. And now that your hood's being invaded by the biggest gang there is, there ain't a peep out of you." She went on to reference the 18th Street in Florence, which are just straight infamous street gangs. And she says, they're out there fighting on your turf. Why aren't you protecting your turf? Why aren't you protecting our people? Why aren't you protecting your people, people like you? Where are you at? And pretty much she's calling for criminal street gangs to fight ICE on the streets.
Oh, wow.
In Los Angeles. This is the assistant mayor calling for this crap. So I found that to be I don't know. I don't know why. Seems like she should be arrested. I don't know. What are your all thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, that's my 2 cents worth. I mean, that's what they're doing, promoting violence, and they're blaming the violence on everybody else. What is actually happening right now with the I mean, the protests and stuff, have they died down? And I apologize, I haven't been in the news a whole lot this week. We had a lot of things that have happened, a lot of things that have come up, and just things that I've had to deal with. But what's happening out in California as far as the protests and stuff going? Is that has it fizzled out?
I don't think there's any organized protests. I think they are still continuing having some isolated looting going on at some different malls and stuff. Okay. But I don't know, Jason. I know there's some more that are being planned for this upcoming 4th of July weekend. There's going to be a second wave. That's what I've been hearing on that there's going to be across different areas in the country. They're planning on some protests and street marches.
Is this still like a No Kings march? Is that what they're calling it? Or It's going to be
anti-immigration. I don't know if they're going to call it No King or maybe they've come up with something else by now, but it's going to be that same old group of people. And it sort of pisses me off that they're choosing to do it, you know, for Independence Day weekend, you know, for to me, the biggest American holiday there is. They're choosing to wave, you know, Mexican flags and go out and protest.
Well, I think that could be a bad deal in some areas too. They want to do that. I know a couple areas where that wouldn't fly. But
yes sir, at
the same time, it's like, you know, I'm looking at this and I really believe that there are no kings. I don't even like saying it, because, you know, we serve no king but King Jesus. I think that there are no kings protest. I think that kind of fizzled out. I think there was somebody that spent an awful lot of money. I'm looking at the website, and the amount of work that they put into it, that the enemy it was definitely funded by our enemies. And, you know, to have as many, you know, 1,900 protests across the United States, for it to them to get that many people involved, you know, and have the website, have their literature and everything like that printed. There was a lot of money involved, and I think that thing was a flop for them, to tell you the truth. I think that they expected that thing to take off and to go like wildfire, and I think it just I think it came to a screeching halt.
Yeah, I definitely did. It didn't smack the wall. I mean, I don't think, and I agree too. I think there was a lot of money spent on it just from the lead time that they had, because I don't think, given the state of events, that they could have put that together. You know, you can put just about anything together for, you know, on the cheap or on a lower budget if you have enough lead time, but you can't do that on these kind of things on a short lead time. I mean, it's gonna require some serious kick, and I think that's what we've seen there. And I there's a lot of these people responding to what you were saying about the ICE agents. I've seen a lot of that too. I mean, up there around Seattle and in some of those places, they're actually, oh well, shoot ICE agents on site. That's not necessarily while they're doing their job. They're literally talking about, if you have if you are ID'd as an ICE agent or placarded correctly, why, you know, just go and shoot them. Don't wait. You know, it's like that's become some kind of a badge for your death warrant or your to be attacked. And it's just wrong.
Yeah, I would agree with you, Tim, and it's definitely interesting of how that they're handling this thing. I mean, and I know for around here, you know, just, I mean, talking about the people that they're going after, they're going after, you know, Russians, Ukrainians, white people that have committed violent crimes. And the way that the enemy portrays it is, oh, they're going after the families, they're going after the people, and we're not going to have anybody to pick the apples or pick the corn or do this kind of stuff. And they're doing the jobs that nobody else wants to do, and that's why they're here anyway. No, it's... I mean, we've still got, you know, construction crews, drywall crews, roofing crews, you name it, of, you know, foreigners, illegals that are working in society. And it's the people and there's people that contribute to society, and they're not being the ones that are grabbed by ICE agents and thrown across the borders and deported within 24 hours. The ones that everyone that I've seen that has been deported around here has been somebody that is either, you know, a sex crime, fraud. There's been a lot of people that have been picked up by ICE that were in these, you know, different check schemes where they were forging checks and doing stuff like that and trying to, you know, steal large amounts of money from people. People that were involved in, you know, bank fraud and different things like that. That's what I'm seeing. And, you know, it's a good riddance. I mean, these people, yeah, absolutely. They need to go.
Well, and I'm sure that changed over the years probably somewhat, but I can remember as a, you know, as a younger person, that we had migrant workers came in. I mean, that was kind of what they had temporary. I don't know what they were called. Was it a green card? I don't really know. I was young. But those people, they traveled around and did different jobs, and then they went back home, you know, and then they came back next year. I mean, it was like, and they were paid very good money. They could go back home and live the rest of that season or whatever that year and do that kind of stuff. And they came in, they came out, they didn't cause trouble. They were decent people. And so what we're seeing here is a departure from that norm, I mean, that we grew up with. It did. And I suspect that underlying all of this ruckus is the fact that that system is still in existence and it's still functional. I mean, we have people who come in and, you know, we used to have sugar beets and they'd come in and hoe the sugar beets or hoe potatoes, or this is just an example. Of course, you know, that's a scally job now, but to their view, I don't know what they want to do, but anyways, you know, that was in existence and that's what they did. And they were, you know, they took care of all that and detasseled corn and different things like that. They were there, they came, they went. They were allowed to be here for that purpose. And when that purpose was over, they went back home. And they didn't raise any stink. If they did, why then it was taken care of in a different way. But, you know, that was that. I mean, maybe that's something else too, to, you know, factor in.
Yeah, we used to, growing up in Nebraska, when I was a kid, you know, we called it, oh, the beaners showed up, and they'd show up. And I always thought that beaners meant because they were the guys that were out there hoeing the beans. I mean, I was in, you know, pinto bean and northern bean country, and that's where we grew a lot of beans. I mean, basically everything around us was, we lived on a farm, and everything was around us was bean fields. And they had housing set up for them, and they'd show up and they'd live in the housing and they'd be out there, and they, you know, they did their job, and that's what they did, and, you know, did their job. And it was a seasonal thing. They come in and work and go on either to the next job or head back to south of the border. And that was it. And times have definitely changed.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. Are they still here doing that part of the job? These others are just, that's an occasion for something totally different, you know, because we see that going on, and I think we're seeing the fallout of that. I mean, it's the gang activity and the everything else. I don't think they were seasonal workers, kids that rode up here and decided to be whatever the gang names or, you know, whatever the affiliations are. Just hang out and raise stink. So it's like, that was a little more focused and a little more, targeted than that, I think.
I know a lot of the agricultural stuff that we're talking about still goes on. And right now you're seeing, and we talked about this a few weeks ago, that there would be over the summer, you're going to see a bigger emphasis coming from ICE towards workplace inspections. And that's happening, you know, all across the country right now. I know you've had some national news out in North Carolina, in the Kings Mountain area. There was a big, fire equipment manufacturer, I think, that made fire extinguishers and that sort of thing. There was just a massive raid there. I think there was like 400 law enforcement guys that showed up to that place. And I know going over in Nebraska last week, they were hitting the meat packing companies, and some of that started happening here in Texas as well. And those are called I-9 inspections, is what ICE does there. And what y'all are talking about, and you know, what I know is what, you know, we call them fruit pickers. They come south of the border and they come down to the valley in Texas, mm-hmm. and they're picking the oranges and they're picking the fruit and doing the pecan trees and that sort of stuff. It's legit. Those farmers, those guys that, you know, have those orchards or whatever, they're keeping track of those guys with the government and doing what they should be doing as far as the declarations of taxes. And what you're finding is that these meat packing plants and these assembly plants for like the fire extinguisher plant in North Carolina, they're gaming the system. They're bringing in these illegals and they're not declaring them. And if they are declaring them, they're not declaring them properly. It's all administrative stuff, but they're greedy. I mean, the corporations, these companies that are doing it, they're not doing it the right way. And that's what's happening here. And all of these libtards that are saying these people are being deported, Jason, you're right. What's happening is the companies themselves, they're getting audited by ICE. They're coming in with these I-9 inspections. They're getting massive fines levied against them because they're not doing it the right way. These illegals that are being picked up, they're all being screened. They're all being interviewed. If they're not previously deported or criminal, and by criminal, I mean like, you know, like you were talking about, like a violent criminal or a sex offender or something like that, they're going through the administrative process of being able to ask for permission to remain here. That's not guaranteed, but they're also not being automatically deported. But if you've been picked up this is the stance ICE is taking, is, you know, if you got picked up for jaywalking, as far as ICE is concerned, that means you've committed a crime in our country and you get deported. They're looking at it that harshly, that there, it's a zero tolerance. That if you have, like I said, if you've been arrested and convicted for anything, they consider you to be a criminal and you have to go back to your home country. So that's kind of the reality of what's happening is the agricultural guys, the guys that are hoeing the sugar beets, like what Tim was talking about, or picking the oranges down in the valley in Texas, they're not looking at those guys because chances are those farmers, those, you know, nursery men that are down there that are growing the trees and that sort of thing, they've been doing it right for 100 years. You know, they know what they're supposed to do, and they're third, fourth generation in the guys that come across the border, do the work, and they go to their families and they live like kings down in Mexico on what they earn in, you know, 6-8 months here in the United States. The ones they're going after are not the Mexicans. They're going after the Guats and the Hondurans and the Nicaraguans that have made it into the interior of the country, and they're working illegally. And I don't know if that's too much to say or not enough to say, but it's not the fruit pickers. It's not the seasonal agricultural workers they're going after, because they're not a threat. I don't know of a better way of saying that.
No, I agree with you 100%, and that's what I'm seeing too. How do these companies get away with hiring? I mean, as far as, you know, you got a fire extinguisher company that's got 400 of them working for them. How do they do that? I mean, how does that work? That just seems...
They apply for individual taxpayer numbers, ITNs. And it's essentially a social security number for a non-native born person. And, you know, they apply for 30 of them, 40 of them, whatever they apply for. And then they pass them around like candy. And, you know, it may be you have Juan Rivera that's on the, you know, that's been issued that number to be a legal worker in the country. And you may have, you know, Isabella Rosales, a female working under it. And for years, and I mean years, I'm going back and even the first Trump administration, they just didn't, there was no emphasis on regulating that, auditing that. You know, they were they were spending all their time making sure you had a $200 tax stamp for a short-barreled shotgun. You know, they didn't care about everything going on in the workplace like that. And that's my understanding, Jason, of how that happens is they're playing the system. They have the required paperwork. It's just the paperwork doesn't necessarily match up with who's there.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. I go back to the story, though, in Nebraska I think it was in Bellevue that, you know, these are jobs that nobody will do, and they shut the plant down and took all the workers, and the owner of the meatpacking plant there said, you know, he's going to go out of business, and they posted jobs, and within 48 hours they were back up to full strength, because turns out that white people will actually do that. They will work like that. So,
well, and I think we're going to see a lot of more of that, especially with the welfare cuts and the unemployment cuts that they're doing, and that's going to take a lot of these people and put them in the position where you don't work, you don't eat, and
it's
godly principle.
Yep, I'm on. Switch subjects just because we're talking about taxes and that sort of thing. I don't know if y'all have seen or if you even care. I don't really care about New York City, but I do care about communists infiltrating the country. Have y'all heard anything about this guy who won the Democrat primary for mayor in New York City?
No, I have not. I did hear a couple little things, but that's something that I wanted to look at. But no, inform us. Yeah. What's the deal with him?
Well, you'll have to forgive me. I don't normally do a good job on these names, but I'll give it my best. His name is Zohran Mamdani. I don't know. It's not John Smith, I can tell you that, but he is Ugandan born from Uganda, but he looks to me Middle Eastern. He looks Middle Eastern to me, but he is a straight up communist. Socialist is what they're saying. That's just that's a entryway into communism, but. I was going to find this one.
I think even that's what he called himself. Didn't he call himself a socialist communist?
He called himself a socialist, yes. Yep. A Democrat socialist is what he called himself. There was just some of the things that I saw that was interesting to me. I'm trying to find one quote. He said, if elected, he's talking about the boroughs there in New York City and some of them being poorer boroughs than others. He said, if elected, he will shift the tax burden from overtaxed homeowners in the outer boroughs to the more expensive homes in richer, whiter neighborhoods.
Oh, geez. So he's a racist.
That quote. Yeah. Yes. And a communist. That's a
communist, that's a racist.
And a communist. Yeah.
And so once again, though, I mean, to me, that's just, if you have ears to hear and eyes to see, they're not hiding stuff anymore, man. They're just coming out and saying this. That I mean, the guy's talking about having city-owned grocery stores to go shop at. Free bus and train fare, free taxi cab rides. And you listen to all this stuff, and guys that are old enough to remember this, that sure sounds like the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
And, I came across that, and I couldn't wait to tell you all that. In New York City, the guy who is likely, he is 80% likely to win the mayoral race when they have the general election. He says that the property tax system is unbalanced and it favors white people. And when he becomes mayor, that he is going to move that. He is going to even that out by targeting richer and whiter neighborhoods with more taxes.
Wow. Boy, they're blatantly just putting it out there on what they want to do. Wow. They hate white people.
Well,
is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're becoming more and more vocal.
Like, yeah.
It kind of sounds like they know that, New York City is, I mean, honestly, I don't understand how that place still functions, but financially, budget-wise, or anything else, the things that go on.
Well, according to this guy, Tim, it's because of the richer, whiter people is why they function.
Well, that's where I was going. I was going to say, if it does go under, they're sure looking for their scapegoat. You know, I mean, it's like,
you bet. Well,
at least everybody, we don't have to. You know, that's that third party. We'll stay down here. Nobody's going to see us, and let's put him in there. And then if things really go sideways. Yeah, we got an out.
You know? And where the heck did this guy come from anyway? I mean, that's the thing. It's like, have you heard of this guy before? I mean,
nope. So I looked him up. He's only been an American citizen for 7 years. he became a naturalized citizen.
And I think that,
in 2018.
In New York, don't you have to be a resident or here for 7 years before you can run for office?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just, like I said, it came across. I thought it was interesting that he's only been an American citizen for 7 years. He's
so what makes him also, so qualified? Yeah, exactly.
I was just about to say that. I kind of looked into him, and I don't even know if he's ever had a job. Like I can't find where he's actually done anything productive. It kind of goes back to like Obama being a community organizer. Like, I don't know where he came from, but there's obviously some money behind it.
Just a big nothing burger. Yeah, right. I never did anything.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, though, the guy that is opposing him in this New York City mayor race, I find this funny because you got this guy, whatever his name is that I can't pronounce, Mandami, which to me sounds like a black maid. But Mandami is running against Eric Adams, who's the current mayor, who is a black guy and a retired New York City police officer. And nobody wants to vote for that guy. They want to vote for this guy. So,
well, that shows you what kind of people are out there in New York.
You got a native-born New York City guy who retired from NYPD, who is a New Yorker. And they're going to vote for the guy from Uganda.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang. So, wow.
Yep. Doesn't affect me. I don't plan on going anywhere.
No.
Evidently, all those rich white people in New York are going to vote for him, too, you know, because they're the ones who make everything and provide everything and run the whole thing up. And it's like, wait a minute. Talk about cutting your nose off to spite your face. I mean, obviously that's, I'm smelling something that don't smell right there.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's a good possibility they're just not the ones in front of the camera.
There you go.
Well, Josh, you've been traveling around quite a bit, and we haven't had you here on the coffee with us in quite some time. What do you see going on out in the world, and anything new in your world?
Well, I was just looking at this article of the Supreme Court ruling in favor of parents having to be notified and having the option to opt out of the transgender LGBTQ, whatever the letters are now, material that the children are being are having shoved down their throat and indoctrinated in. So the Supreme Court made another step in, I guess, the right direction of either pulling this stuff out or at least having parents having the option to be able to be notified and opt out of it. I think it's pretty interesting that the Christians aren't the ones that are up in arms and fighting over it.
No, just, go ahead.
Oh, so, you know, just a few of the books that were brought into the courtroom to argue the case. In Born Ready, these are some books and what they're about. They're brought from schools, you know, from curriculum. In Born Ready, a little boy gets confused about how his sister is transitioning into a boy, prompting the mother to inform him that not everything needs to make sense. It says that the MCPS board provided teachers with guidance to inform students that not everyone is a boy or a girl, according to the like many books targeted at young children, the books are unmistakably normative. They are clearly designed to present certain values and beliefs as things to be celebrated, and certain contrary values and beliefs as things to be rejected. High school students may understand that widespread approval of a practice does not necessarily mean that everyone should accept it. Very young children are most unlikely to appreciate that fine point. Anyway, everyone can look into that. That's a pretty big deal. I don't want to say shocked, but just looking at these books and reading about what the different ones are about that are in our public school curriculum, it's worse than what I knew that it is.
Yeah, and I seen that also that recently, within the last week, that the UN started coming out, and I got an article in front of me that says UN sounds alarm on child gender transitions, calls for ban due to rising exploitation concerns. And I'm just going to read a little bit of this, but it says the United Nations has finally begun to acknowledge the irreversible harm of gender ideology's most dangerous frontier, medicalizing and sexualizing children's gender. In a groundbreaking June 2025 report, the UN Special Report on Violence Against Women, Reem Alassam, exposed the legal erasure of biological sex as a catalyst for exploitation, particularly in the push for child gender transitions. The report slams these experimental procedures as violations of children's rights to safety, health, bodily autonomy, aligning with growing global backlash against puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and irreversible surgeries for minors. But the stakes go deeper. This isn't about a field of medicine gone perverse. It's about power and exploitation of children and protecting children from a predatory industry. And, I mean, that's one of the things that's like, you know, I mean, it's you got a pedophile out there that preys upon children. But you've got doctors that are out there that are preying upon children, and something that is, you know, equally, if not worse, acts of trying to, you know, scar them, destroy them for life. I mean, and, you know, these doctors that are involved in this, I mean, you know, there ought to be a name for them. I mean, but they're absolutely no good. They're not doing these children any good. You know, and a doctor's supposed to be somebody that, you know, you go to when you need help. I mean, a doctor, you know, back in the day used to be a good guy. Is somebody that, you know, it, you know, helps you with a broken leg or broken arm, or, you know, if you got, you know, catch something. They're supposed to be the guys that are, you know, supposed to be one of the good guys. And which I know I'm talking to a bunch of people that understand that, you know, they're not on our side. These guys that are actually, I mean, doing these kind of things, it's like, I mean, they're sick. They're out of their minds. I mean, they're just, I mean, you know, it's crazy. It's nuts.
Yeah, it's its own special kind of demented behavior. I think when we look at this, what we're looking at here is, you know, people, we look at the here and now, but this attack is all about our children. It's very broad spectrum. Whether it's the illegal aliens, whether it's the education system, whether it's this medical mutation that you know, that they're putting on to our children, or the total non-training of godly values, precepts, and behavior patterns. I mean, it is a destruction of future generations' heritage. I mean, that's what we're seeing. They're destroying, or trying to. They're not going to get it done, okay? But they certainly want to destroy our children's future, you know, home benefits, and basically take them away from their God. I mean, that's the theft process, is that destruction there.
Well, that's a systematic attack. Like, there's a plan. It's not just them spitballing. Right, there's a laid out process, and we all know the backstory on it. But there's a way that you go about this, and that's what they're doing.
They definitely have a playbook, and they're running it, or trying to.
Mm-hmm.
If they could just get God out of the way, and some old sheepdogs, you know, it'd work better. So,
Jason, you said you didn't have a name for them. I have a name for them. I just don't think I can say it on the radio.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of where I was at, too.
Yeah. Well, I would, but the folks, you know, everybody's in a different situation. I understand that. And the ones that do have children in the school systems, I would just highly advise, you know, get involved and make some classroom visits and see what kind of filth and garbage that they might be shoving down your children's throats with them not even knowing about it, right? I mean, because these are young children that they don't have a developed brain. They don't have a whole lot of experience to go off of to know what normal is. And if every day they're spending 8 hours a day being indoctrinated into this new normal that they want them to embrace, that's the direction they're going to go in.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, basically, I think is what it boils down to is, and, you know, I mean, we've talked about it before, but, I mean, you're not going to get, you can't have your children in these schools. I mean, even, you know, the direction that things are going, you've got to have them in, I mean, homeschooled or Christian education of some sort. Because there has been so much garbage and trash that they have pumped into this public school system, and, you know, they boxed them in. They don't know what bathroom to use. They don't know if they need to be used in a litter box. They don't know, you know, they can identify one day as a boy and one day as a girl. I mean, it's, you know, it is completely anti-Christ, anti-Christian.
And that's literally one of these books is What Are Your Words? And that book tells students in a similar age range that one's pronouns can, quote, change like the weather, and follows one's child who embraces the they, them pronoun. So I mean, you're exactly right. They're, your reading material is teaching you that, you know, you can change like the weather, be whoever, what you want to be. If you want to be a cat today or girl tomorrow, or it's your choice.
Well, and I'm always stricken or struck, whatever the right tense is, with the fact that they always do what they tell everyone, or what they preach against, or what they come out against. And I'm always thinking about this the other day in regards to the a lot of these different systems, but particularly stuck out that it was the public education system. They cry and whine and bellyache about bullies. I mean, and their definition of bullies is not my definition of bullies, because, you know, I taught my children different than that, but and I was raised different than that as far as go get help, you know. I mean, it was kind of like, but anyways, the point is they bully those kids into all kinds of things. I mean, there's all kinds of nasty administrative procedures if they don't hang out with the, and they shovel that stuff down there in front of them all the time, and then shove them through it, and that's bullying. I mean, you know, well, you can't dress like that, you can't this, you can't worship God, you can't, your parents are stupid. Those are all forms of bullying. So they're doing exactly what they're, you know, condemning in essence, but they were a lot more underhanded. But since we're the teachers, or since we're the administrators, why, it's okay for us to do it. We can bully you in the right direction. So,
well, it talks about in this testimony that the teachers, you know, the school workers are taught to identify those who push back and weren't tolerant of these teachings. Talking about the young children, that they were taught to identify them, and there's a process to start more or less punishing them from not embracing what the literature is teaching. I just told Jason the other day that we really need to get us some T-shirts made up. You know, the "We will not tolerate intolerance." Maybe a big
yeah, I know. We look, you know,
on the other side of that. Who are you talking about? Been doing? We just came from the national 4-H shooting sports competition. Whenever you know, they had a 1,000 4-H children out there on the floor enjoying a dance the other night, and there were no fights, and it seemed like everybody knew who they were, and nobody was drinking out of pans on the floor using litter boxes. You know, they were pretty squared away. Not necessarily country children, you know, ones that just had a good, solid family life and teaching base. You know, and it's so encouraging to see that, and to realize, you know, that there are still so many of us out there, right? We just don't make it on the news. It's way news video, the litter boxes in the corner, than it is the children that are out here, you know, living life and learning and enjoying a good life. You know, that their parents are sacrificing to give them. And there was conversation of, you know, backing those children away from the computer screens and not letting them have just unrestricted access to the news and to everything that's going on. And, you know, some people would argue that it's putting their head in the sand. But I think we all know as adults that have been around here a long time that you can get oversaturated with all this stuff going on, and can lead to worry and questioning and instability. You know, we've got to stay grounded in who we are, and what the Word tells us, you know, and we keep, you and I, Jason, has been a theme forever, you know, is you've got to go back to the basics periodically and reground yourself, right? Because they're trying to throw your compass off with all this black that's out in the air, And it does. None of us are immune to that. It affects you. And so you got to make sure that you're realigning yourself with God and His Word, and being around folks that are like-minded is such a plus for that, you know, so that you can, that iron sharpens iron, right? And it doesn't necessarily be in a church building for that to happen. You know, it can be out there on the range while your children are shooting together.
That's a really awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and it kind of reminds me, just listening to you, I remember there was a message one time, turn your radio on. And I'm a radio man, I mean, you know, and I do. We've talked about it, ham radio operator and other things like that. But, you know, you have, it's very important in ham radio, because if you don't have proper grounding, static builds up and it overcomes your line of communication. And when we see all this stuff going on, I think that is kind of a point of thought of what we're saying. There's a technical aspect to it, too. We get too much static on the line. We can't talk to God, and we don't hear God, you know, because of the buildup. So we've got to get ourselves grounded and get that static dissipated so that we're able to communicate and to hear and to know what we're supposed to do.
You know, it's been encouraging just seeing the different, you know, I'm not in love with the guy, but seeing the different things that the Trump administration has been making here recently. And, you know, I'm not necessarily for dropping F-bombs on, you know, in front of the world, right? There's a time and a place for shop talk and not. But I do like the idea that it's being more embraced of men being men and having a backbone. And it's being constantly communicated that they are making an effort to change the direction of the country, that going from things that don't make sense, right? Just like the children are being taught. We're not going to play this game anymore. Right, we don't care what you want to do, but I don't have to acknowledge everyone in the room individually whenever I refer to, you know, the team did a great job. Well, just because I didn't call out the LGBTQs that are there, you know, or whatever. And so the one I'm talking to is they tried to jam them up about not recognizing the women. Well, when you recognize a group of people, you know, whether it be a team or whatever you talk about, that's the whole group. And it makes me happy to see that they're rejecting a lot of the nonsense that has gotten to be the new normal. And I just got to believe that that's opening people's eyes, and that just like that old song in the video about stout-hearted men, you know, it's the hardest to be the first one to stand up and say no and to put your foot down and try to make it through. And we're seeing more and more of that now from the Trump gang. And you can argue everything else, you know, but it is a good thing that they are making stands on this a lot of this ridiculousness and saying no. That's good for us, that's good for our people. And it makes it easier for people in everyday life to make those stands and to say, no, we're not going to pretend that you're
mm-hmm. Josh, this week I was talking to somebody kind of going along the same lines, and at work I was talking to a young man, and I told him, you know, it's one of the hardest things is to be the first. But you know, if you take a stand, you put your foot down, you'll be surprised at how many people want to be the next. And that's coming from Washington, coming from the White House. It's good to see people putting their foot down. And kind of like what you were talking about with the stout-hearted men, you know, hopefully people get, I don't know what the word, emboldened or whatever, that they see the national leaders putting their foot down, hopefully, in their local communities, they'll want to do the same thing. I mean, that's hopefully that's what we start seeing. I think we are seeing. I think we're seeing it all across the country. Yeah. And to me, when you were talking about the 4-H shooting sports, and I was listening to you, and I was really taking it all in. I was just sitting there today. I got a deal that I have to go with, do with my children. And it's a group of, the name of the group is Trail Life, and it's a Christian alternative to the Boy Scouts. And we're just having a, outdoor day, and I'm going to be doing that after coffee. And I know the last time I did something like that, I was kind of standing around. We were actually just fishing in a tank, and I was thinking, you know, America really isn't gone. It's still here. The problem is, America is not America anymore, but it's still full of Americans, if that makes sense. And I think what we've got to do is not concentrate on the noise and not concentrate on the, everything that the enemy wants us to concentrate on. You know, we've gone through great lengths of showing they control the news, they control the media, they control all that stuff. And, they want us to be at odds. They want us to believe that America is gone. They want us to believe in what they're telling us. And it probably would do us good to turn that stuff off and do things like what Josh was talking about. You know, be around a group of good young men and women and realize all's not lost. You know, America is still full of Americans. We just have to get back on the right track and repent for our sins as a nation and get on our knees and pray that that there will be a reprieve.
Well, and a couple of thoughts is and I was actually, it's kind of interesting, but Americans are still here. Godly values are still here. People still take care of their neighbors. It just won't be televised. You know, I mean, it's like that's kind of the way that works. I mean, it's like it's not going to be published. It's not going to be promoted as a general rule, and because that would encourage continuation of a concept. And I think the other thing is, and I like the idea of you got to be that one to stand up. And it reminds me of that story of Elijah, you know, when he said, "I'm the only one left, Lord." And he said, no, get up. I've got a whole bunch of others out there. But I think that, you know, it just takes one. And Christ, he was one of those ones. I mean, he stood up and we're still think of the power of that one. We're still to this day following those, or attempting to do our best to follow, to stand forward, to carry that out. So don't be discouraged. It's a long ways from being, they haven't won. They're not going to win. But it's sure important that they televise it like they're going to win. So that's their little glitch that they that's part of that spell casting power that they want to use to cow people, to put people in the box and make them shut up and all those kind of things. And it's like, nope, not going to happen.
Well, and one of the scriptures that we've always championed about that, you know, in no way alarm. I think it's Philippians 1, starting in 27. Only conduct yourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. So that whether I come and see you or remain absent, I will hear of you that you are standing firm in one spirit, with one mind, striving together for the faith of the gospel, in no way alarmed by your opponent, which is a sign of destruction for them, but of salvation for you. And that too from God. For you has been granted for Christ's sake not only to believe in him, but also to suffer for his sake, experiencing the same conflict which you saw in me and now here to be in me. And you think about that. Like, when you hit somebody, like you rear back and you hit somebody with all you got, what's the scariest thing they can do? Stand there and look at you, no way alarm. Like, you know it's about to be a bad day.
That's all you got? Yeah, exactly.
And we're not to be alarmed. We're not to dwell over it. We are to fight. Right? We're supposed to be conducting ourselves in a manner worthy of the gospel of Christ. And, you know, he gave us that example of being in there turning over the tables, right? I mean, you go in there with your whip and you straighten this stuff out. But we just got to, back to that being grounded, and we got to remind ourselves that we should not be alarmed about what they're doing, because we know who's really in charge. And we know it's like that suffering that the scripture's talking about. That suffering is so good for you, because you can't truly enjoy a beautiful sunny day, you know, without a nasty cold rainy day to compare it to, right? Can't enjoy how well a 1911 shoots unless you've shot a crappy Glock before, right? I mean, it's just, there's a difference. And it's good for us to do some suffering so that we can realize, well, we've got it. And I believe 100% that as a nation, we are out of touch with how well we have it by living here where we do in the freedoms that we've always enjoyed. As a people, I don't think it would take a lot of time outside the United States for us to come back here and want to clean up our own laundry if we actually realized how well we had it.
I agree with you, Josh. One of the things that I was going to jump back just a little bit, and I think this ties in, but Derek, he sent me a couple messages here, and I did not know that how many people were actually leaving the United States and headed to Israel to get away from, I mean, sexual predators, pedophiles that have fled the United States and headed to Israel just to basically evade justice.
Avoid prosecution.
Yeah, exactly. Many accused American pedophiles have fled to Israel, taking advantage of the law of return, which grants automatic citizenship to Jewish individuals and their families with minimal barriers. While criminal background checks exist, offenders can bypass these requirements in various ways, allowing them to evade justice. And there's been a lot of them. I mean, and, you know, that just...
As if there might be.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I did not know that. And there is, yeah. I mean, what's that say about them? I mean, it just, you know, that's one of the things is I really think that, you know, the Jewish propaganda out there, and we call it, we talk about a lot of stuff that's Jewish propaganda, but that's what they do, is they hate our God. They hate that everything that he created, and they want to continue to just attack it and try to destroy it. You know, when God creates Adam and Eve, you know, which is the way that God intended families to be, it's a fundamental of, you know, Christianity. That's the way that God intended households to be built, and they have done everything that they can do to try to destroy that and to break it down and to pervert it and to, you know, change it and make it the way that they want. But I think what it goes back to is they hate our God so much, they hate everything that he created, and they hate everything that he put into you know, into play and every one of his ordinances, and they can just continue to fight against everything that our Creator created.
They hate the Genesis plan.
They do.
Yep. I want to jump real quick, Jason, and just say, if people don't know, Tel Aviv is considered to be the homosexual capital of the Middle East. It is widely accepted there. And also, I would encourage people to research on their own the extradition laws for Israeli citizens.
They're almost non-existent. That if you are a Jew and a citizen or a dual citizen and you can make it to Israel, it's almost like home base playing tag with your kids. If you can make it there, the government of Israel simply will not allow you to be extradited to face foreign prosecution somewhere.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and I don't know. John Hopkins did a study. I can't remember the exact date of time, but it was John Hopkins. And they did a genetic study over there showing 97.5% of the Israelis that live in Israel have zero ancient Hebrew DNA.
Yeah.
And, I mean, when you look at all those kind of things, it's like, and it always interests me, that word lie being in there. I mean, it's just like it's a big lie, So what we see is it's
Tim, a lie. One of the things I know Jason and I have talked about offline, and I don't know why this just sticks with me, is something that's important, but it's important to me. I don't know why, but it's funny to me that, we're supposed to swallow the pill that the Jews that are over there are God's chosen people, and all through Scripture, God's chosen people are called Israelites. But these modern Jews don't refer to themselves as Israelites. They refer to themselves as Israelis. And that's important to me. It seems like that's obvious and in your face. I mean, maybe I'm missing something there.
Well, they've always got that esoteric, that underlying, broadcasting stuff going on. So it certainly leaves the guy. It make you step back. And what about the verse in Revelations, those who call themselves and are not, I mean, we were warned about it. And then I just read one the other day, and unfortunately I don't have that address in front of me, but when Christ said, no, you're not of Abraham, you're of your father, the devil. And he was talking to that group. I mean, he makes it very plain what the genetic structure was. But we just kind of...
Yeah, and John A., yeah.
Yeah, most modern pulpits simply resort to, well, that's just a spiritual setup, It was all spiritual. He wasn't saying he didn't, but he did say that, So, do we take God at his word? Or just whitewash it with whatever makes you happy. So it's
That goes back to that red letter stuff in the Bible, right? That the actual words of Jesus get preached very little from the pulpit because it doesn't haw and gee with the programming that they want done from the pulpit. If more people heard that of what Jesus actually said about the Jews and who he considered to be the enemy and who exactly they were working for, maybe John Hagee down in San Antonio wouldn't have such a successful ministry. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to pick a fight with Josh, but man, I enjoy shooting Glocks myself. I think they shoot pretty good.
Well, I like them. But if you've ever held a nice shooting 1911, you just like this.
There's no doubt. I'll tell you, I spent some time on the range this week, though, shooting Jason, I'm completely changing the subject. Is that okay?
No, go right ahead.
Okay. Man, I spent some time this week on the range shooting Glock. They've introduced a kind of a new deal. I think came out in January. It's a Glock G47, and it's coming with an aim point, what they call a COA. I have no clue what COA stands for, but it's just a MOS red dot. And I was shooting one that comes with what they call an enhanced trigger from Glock, and that sucker was a tack driver. It was beyond my marksmanship. I mean, I can tell you that, but I had the opportunity. I threw 500 rounds through one, and I'll tell you, if they could figure out some way to keep that sliding barrel from getting hot, that would probably be the hottest thing on the market right now. I really enjoyed shooting that.
Yeah, I'm ashamed that I can't speak to it with you, because I've never Got one, never had one, so I guess I'll have to go get one. That way we can talk about it.
There you go.
Once I shoot, yeah. Sound like a good excuse.
There you. Well, it's you got to be able to form an objective opinion. So the only way you can do it is go buy one.
All right.
I highly recommend it.
And that was a what? What model did you call that?
It's a G47.
47? I didn't even know they made a 47.
Yeah, it's a hybrid. I'm going to get this all wrong. It's a 19 slide, a G19 slide on a 17 frame.
Okay.
And so it doesn't, the length of the slide is a little more compact. It takes the 17 round mags. Like I said, I kind of fell in love with it. It is a pretty neat gun.
Okay.
Yeah, I lean towards the 17s myself. So,
yes, sir.
Yeah, and I just recently got a 17 long slide, and I was just, I'm completely impressed with that. It was absolutely, and I used to be the guy that was the complete anti-Glock guy. I hated Glocks until, I don't know, it's been probably 6-7 years ago. It was 1911 or nothing, and, but the thing about a 1911 is they're fidgety, and you've got to, they jam. You've got to clean them very regularly, which I think you should clean it, whatever you're shooting. But you can be at the range and you can run 200 rounds through a good shooting Glock or a good shooting 1911 and have to stop and clean it just to shoot it more. And there's a lot involved in anything after a Gen 4 that I've found as far as a Glock is concerned. You can pick it up and every one of them, they shoot, and you can keep shooting them and they shoot the same and they go bang every time you pull the trigger. I've been very, 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 very impressed with them. They've made a lot of changes, a lot of improvements, and it's a very, very impressive firearm.
Well, that's funny because, I'm speaking pro 1911, but I am one of those, I think, guiding folks that whenever I showed up, at your house with a bag of a dozen different variants of the Glock, and went to shoot them, it may have been influence on you in there.
I was gonna ask you, Jason, was your previous hatred for Glocks because they were black?
Well, if they made them in white, it might have,
racism has no position when it comes to firearms. I just want to point that out.
Yeah, I know. I do. I had somebody give me a sticker a while back that said "Black rifles matter," and I like that. I thought that was pretty. Pretty cool. I've known a lot of people that were in my electrician buddy, Dave. He was one of these guys, and he was, I kept trying to get him to get an AR-15. I'm like, Dave, and he had, I taught him how to reload. He was into reloading. He was, we did a lot of work on a lot of different guns, and he just, I don't need one of those. And it was a couple years ago, it was when Obama was in office, and he was there was all this scare and everybody was buying the AR-15s and stuff like that. He told me about this, Ruger 5.56 AR-15 that they had down there at the gun shop, and told me what they wanted for it. And I said, well, if you don't buy it, I'll buy it. And he bought it. And he came back, and he liked that thing so much. He just had so much fun with it. And he bought like six more since then.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I don't need one of those. I don't need one of those. It was one of those things. And it's like, no, you don't need it. But, I mean, like, just, Dave, just go shoot one. You'll like it. And I know a lot of people that have done the same thing. They went out there. They've, you know, they started putting one together. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, yeah, this is actually, you know, a lot of fun. And that's, yep, that's what it is. I don't know.
Good, clean, all-American fun. I wanted to ask you, go ahead, Justin.
I was just saying you don't need coffee, but it's still good, and it's best black as well. So, it's funny. I don't know if you looked at the origin of it or not, but this Block 47, looks like last time Trump was president, it was developed for the U.S. Customs and Border Patrol.
Border Patrol, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pretty neat.
Yes, sir. Before we jump off this, I want to ask y'all's opinion. I've always been a guy that I've just been against red dots. I've been against red dots on pistols, not so much on rifles or whatever, but on pistols, I just never get into it. And I've figured out that it's probably just me being kind of ornery and saying I don't want to learn something new. Really after this week, and also realizing that my eyes are now, well over four decades old, I'm kind of getting into these red dots on pistols, and I don't know how much experience y'all have had on it. If you consider it cheating, my stance was always, oh, we're gonna give up marksmanship for, you know, this is just video game technology. We're not gonna be teaching these youngsters how to really shoot. We're just gonna be teaching them how to paint a target with a red dot. But from a practical standpoint, and I mean, Jason, I don't know if this is prepper tip of the week or not, but just as a becoming an older guy now and embracing that, I'm kind of feeling like this might be a little bit of a game changer. I don't know. I'm really impressed with this particular optic and this gun, because they have figured out, they're calling it an A-cut. They have figured out how to take all the wiggle out of this optic. It is rock solid. As a matter of fact, Glock is recommending you use the red dot to charge the weapon. Not even the slide. They're saying grab a hold of that red dot and yank it for all it's worth. It's not going to lose zero. And I think it's kind of a game changer.
I think it is too. I mean, that's my opinion. And I'm with you. I think that, okay, so it's both. You can pick that thing up and you can shoot it, and you can teach somebody, you can hand that to somebody, and it's, you know, pull the slide back, put one in the chamber, and put that dot where you want the bullet to go. It's as simple as that. And it is, and they're fantastic, and they've come a long ways, and they're great. But it's also something that can fail. And I've had red dots on stuff that it's, you know, you pick it up and, you know, you got all different kinds of them. You got them with solar panels on them. You got them that, you know, are hybrids. They've got batteries and solar panels on them. They've got internal batteries. They do break. They can break. You need to know how to shoot both. But I do like it. And I like it for, you know, having something that, you know, you hear something, you go outside, you know, you put that dot on whatever you want to shoot, and it's, you know, bang, bang, bang. That's it. You know, game over. I don't know. Josh, what do you think? You played around with them quite a bit, too.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. I didn't realize that I was speaking for y'all, but, like, I don't think we've bought a new non-MOS pistol in years, right? It's kind of like, I don't know, having air conditioning, cruise control, and pickup truck. You know, you don't have to have it. But it sure is nice, and it's hard to argue the fact of target acquisition and handling, and, you know, you don't – I like them. I like them a lot. Same thing with Jason said, I never want to have something set up that doesn't still co-witness with my irons, right, because they do fail. And you got to know what to do when they do. But, I love a red dot, and I've – got several different makes and models, and just because they're more expensive doesn't mean they're better. Jason proved that with a little Academy brand site that we've been running on everything around here for years that are just bulletproof.
Yeah, we ended up in, you know, a couple of the ones that, you know, it used to be that everybody said, well, I'm not gonna buy one of those. It's not made in America. It's junk. It's got to be garbage and everything like that. I'll tell you what, like the Swamp Fox, I had one of those on a Glock 43X for 3 years. Finally destroyed it, and you know, it was probably my own fault, but I purposely kind of torture tested this guy. I wanted to make sure that it was going to hold up, and it finally failed me. But I got on the computer, looked it up, called the phone number, and I was surprised. It was somebody answered the phone, and they were in Denver, Colorado, and about, you know, about an hour away from me. And I talked to him, telling him what happened, this and that, gave him the serial number off of it. And they said, well, we're going to send you a label, send it back to us. Guy calls me back as soon as he got it. And he's like, man, I ought to just run this up to you. He said, you're really close. He's like, I should just, you know, make a trip up there and give this thing to you. But I'm like, don't worry about it. Just drop it in the mail. And he dropped a brand new one in the mail to me and apologized for the inconvenience of, you know, and it breaking down. So customer service was phenomenal, and it's a phenomenal site for, you know, basically it was right around $100, where anything comparable is probably about three times that. I was very, very impressed with it, impressed with the customer service and the quality. And talking to the way that I found out about them was there was a guy that was teaching a concealed weapons class here. He was actually the one that taught my wife's class when she got her CCW, and that's what he carried. And he was a Marine officer for I don't know how many years, but he said you need to give it a try. He said for the money, he said I leave mine on all the time, and I just change the batteries every 6 months. And he's like, I just set a reminder on it. I don't worry about turning it off or on, because, you know, a lot of these sites have options where you pick it up and it turns on this and that. He's like, just leave it on all the time. And he said, I've had the, you know, I've done that for 4 or 5 years now. And I was impressed with that. And that's what I did. I got it. I left it on and changed the batteries every 6 months, just put it, dropped another CR, you know, 2032 battery in it. And it was a good way to go. So, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money on it, but it is something that is very convenient. Let's say that. Tim, what's your thoughts? We're not going to leave you out of this conversation.
Funny. No, I agree with you. I think they're wonderful. I think Will made a great point on the eyesight thing. I'm suffering from that a little bit too. I got a few more decades on eyesight than he does yet, and it's like it does help. Sights are approaching, I mean, iron sights are approaching worthless to me. So, you know, I can shoot pretty good without sights, but it's nice to be precise sometimes. And I've got about five of them out running now, and I'm very, I have different levels of, or degrees of wow factor on them. And I like what was said. Price isn't always an indication of quality, so don't make that mistake and think you've got to buy the most expensive one. But maybe don't buy the cheapest thing you can find either. You know, but there's some really good products. They really work. They seem durable, and I think they're really improving them. And I'm not against them at all, but I do think that you need to be capable of doing your job with your firearm without them as well. I mean, you know, just for you know, things happen. I mean, stuff happens, right? So, you know, kind of get it, kind of
That's where I'm at. So pretty much you guys covered it, nailed it. That's a good deal. Keep some batteries around too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You know, we enjoy our guns. They're fun to us. They're entertainment, and you know, it's a lifestyle, right? But we also know that they're not the weapons that are going to win the war for us, right? There are weapons that are far more powerful than anything here in the physical. backing up to, I think, all of our previous conversations with the ICE and the Supreme Court rulings and the Trump administration and all this, Jim had a thought, and I just summed it all up and brought it together to me. Is, you know, remembering the power of the word no, and the fact that you do not have to go along with any of this. If anything's against the word, if it's not following the teaching of Christ, then our rule book, our law, it's your responsibility to put that big little word into play and say no, that, you know, we're not going to go along with this. And that mindset is way more important than any amount of guns or ammunition, you know, because that's where it all starts. That's where the resistance mindset starts, is having the ability to identify what's going on and say, no, we're not going to be a part of it. And then everything else stems from there.
Yeah, I agree. Attitude and, you know, having your mind made up that it's, you know, we're not going to do this. We're not going there. We're, you know, it stops here. And, you know, that's, I think that's definitely, important. And, you know, that's what, you know, we as Christians are, you know, constantly, our enemies constantly are trying to put us into a position where they want us to defend ourselves. And we shouldn't even be in the argument, and we should just be stopping them and saying, no, you know, this is it. It's, you know, I'm not going to argue about, you know, these trannies or these children transitioning or them deciding, you know, what. It's not up for an argument. It stops here. It's wrong, and that's it. End of story.
And a friend of mine and myself were talking the other night and about so many times when people say that people throw it out there, oh, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. And then later on, they end up going back doing it exactly whatever it is. Like, you need to pay attention. And whenever you say you're not going to do something, you put your money where your mouth is, right?
Right.
If I tell you I'm going to do something, there's a commitment behind that. I'm not just saying it to say it, you know, because I don't throw that out there a lot because I know what it means to say that I'm not going to do something. And that means that I'm all in on it, right? Whatever it takes for me to back up me saying I'm not going to do it, that's what I'm willing to go. That's the extent that I'm willing to go to honor my word. You know, I'm not going to say that I'm not going to do it unless I'm all in on that state.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to have children. I'm not going to choose for my children to be fed this bunch of garbage and indoctrination that is teaching them to be anti-Christian, to hate our God and everything that we stand for. We were talking about, you know, the Jews and how they hated our system. They hated God. That all goes back down to they hate us as well because we are God's creation, right? And it's important to remember that is they hate us. It is war, and it is real.
I think that what is it? First, I think it's 2 Corinthians 10:4, where he talks about for the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. And yeah, we're not. Our forefathers had quotes that said, we request God to make bear his arm and defend his people. And I think that when you are called, or when that's put upon your heart in order to stand forward and to make those kind of resolves, that God will give you the power for that. And if you don't happen to have, you're never unarmed, I guess is what I'm kind of going back to. The weapons that God, we're never unarmed. It doesn't matter whether I'm standing there in my sock feet and my pajamas. I'm not unarmed. I mean, God is on my side. And, it always comes back to one of the things that I always remember was Samson. You know, he was out there and the Philistines, they came up against him, and he was having all those problems, and he was looking around for a weapon. This was one of a really strong guy, you know. I mean, we know the story, but he reached over and picked up the jawbone of an ass, and he did quite a number on these enemies with that. I mean, could have been a big stick, could have been any number of things. That's a physical example of not being unarmed, but there are angels, God has power. He protects us all the time, and we'll never know how much protected, how deeply we're protected until that time when we can see and understand those godly things. But you're not on your own. You're not, you know, it's not about not being able to do something just because you don't have a government model or a Glock in your pocket or something like that. I mean, God's there with you, and that's the lion in the room, you know. So
it's sure special when he lets you see those angels. We know it happens from time to time, and you just, there's a security, you know, that comes from that, from knowing that he does. He's got us, and it's not all on us, right? He's there to fight this fight with us.
Greater are the forces that are for us than the forces that are against us, and we need to have that mindset and continue just to walk in that daily. You know, I mean, you know, you think about it, it's like, you know, I mean, when you got Christ on your side, it doesn't matter if you have a slingshot and you're facing giants, you can have the victory.
When you're in God's will, he will let you get in impossible situations just so he can show you that it doesn't matter if you see that it's possible or not, right? And whenever he communicates with you, when he lets you see those things, when you're doing his will and you can't afford the light bill, and, you know, it literally shows up at your door and a guy prepaying for some work that you're doing for him, it's so special whenever God shows you himself and that, right? And that's what we need to be every day. Then we need to pray that God would give us eyes to see, to show us his will and what we're supposed to be doing, right? We want to be found doing whatever it is that we're supposed to be doing, seeking his will for us. And I try not to tell God no, right? That's what scares me, is telling God no. We're not supposed to fear man. We're supposed to fear God. And I just know that how much he has blessed me, and every single day he continues to. So I'm afraid of what would happen if I did tell him no, right? But I'm not trying to be that guy. And when you're seeking his will, when you're in his will, and he shows you that, boy, I tell you, that's a feeling like nothing else.
Amen.
Amen. Yeah. Well, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. Closing thoughts, gentlemen.
Being humble and being thankful activates the power of God. We ask for what we need and are thankful for what we get. It may not always be exactly what we want, but it's exactly what we need, because that's what he's promised us. And I think a lot of times that, we miss that, but it activates the power of God, and it'll go on and up from there.
And so recently, and we were having that conversation last night or this morning, whichever one, the other side of that coin about that humility and allowing you to have access to that power, pride can put a wall between you and it, right? Not him the credit and us being prideful. And that's something that creeps slowly sometimes. We've really got to watch or examine ourselves and make sure that we're not falling victim to that, thinking that we're something special and that, you know, we're the ones that are making it happen.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, the thing is too, is, you know, I think that there's so much power in, you know, being humble and being teachable and continuing to learn. I talked about that from church a couple of weeks ago, is, you know, just keep learning, realizing that you ain't got it all figured out. And, you know, realizing that, hey, we are all under authority. I think about that centurion that Christ talked about, and, you know, the faith that he had, but he understood he was in a position of authority, but he was under authority, and he was in submission to the authorities that were over him, and how much power that actually gave him. And, you know, we have all got different positions. Be teachable, be humble, continue to learn. There's a lot there. We could talk about that for hours, but that's where we need to be at. And I really believe that when you are, if you're continuing to learn and continue to seek him and his ways and, you know, trying to be that person, that he's just going to continue to, you know, give it to you more and more.
It's funny, and it's so simple that it's accurate. You do have two ears and one mouth, and that's more.
Yep. I hear you. Wow. Well, man, I want to thank you for being here this morning. I appreciate it. Thank you, Remnant, for tuning in. And, oh, I think we'll go out with a song.
Once a man's home was his castle, only his foes would violate. And the border of his property was the moat round his estate. All these kingly rights of sovereignty, once bestowed on us by God, have been lost somewhere in history, in the fine print and the fraud. Once a man and his religion was protected by the law. In America, the Constitution formed a verbal wall. Now the law that used to separate is the law that's daily breached. Now the worried watchman on the wall is crying, heaven's under siege. Heaven's under siege. Woe now, heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ rot in jails for their beliefs. You know corruption reigns in government, but heaven's under siege. Heard the watchman sound a warning call back in 1992. When they murdered Vicky Weaver, just like they'll murder me or you. When they stormed the church in Waco, women and children burned alive. And now the ones who rot in prisons are the ones they let survive. Heaven's under siege. Well, now heaven's under siege. When the Bible and the Bill of Rights have been trampled in the streets. And when the gentle lambs of Jesus Christ rot in jails for their beliefs.
you know corruption reigns in government when heaven's under siege. And now a voice cries in the wilderness.
You are listening to the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network with Pastor Peter J. Peters, made possible by the tithes and offerings of the faithful. If you would like to be one of those who help to get needed truths out to others, send